Hi, everybody. I am Michelle Louise and I'm a compulsive overeater. So happy to be here with you today and share my experience, strength, and hope. First of all, really glad to be at a big book meeting. This is actually how I was given Overeaters Anonymous along with Overeaters Anonymous literature. But this is the way that I worked the steps through my sponsor. So the big book is a huge part of my Overeaters Anonymous recovery. You know, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't even know what a compulsive overeater was, and I didn't know I was one until you know, I hit my rock bottom. And I didn't know until I came into this room what compulsive eating behaviors were or food behaviors. So I'm so glad that I was willing to give it a shot and keep coming back to find those things out. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 3 years and 4 months, I was here about 4 days before I became abstinent, and I have now been abstinent since September the 3rd, 2019, and I completely, with the steps of recovery, have been able to change my life. I would like to say I'm transformed in a way. So I'll take you back to, you know, reasons why I think I am a compulsive overeater or what it was like for me. I think I was a compulsive overeater at a very young age. I think I scared people with my food behaviors as a child. I remember getting in trouble for silly things that I would do, one of which was eating butter out of my grandmother's butter dish on the butter table. I remember, you know, first it was just one or two tablespoons here and there, and then it quickly started to become like the entire stick of butter would be gone and I would be getting in trouble. And I think they figured, what are we going to do with this? This is really strange, but we don't know how to deal with this. So just tell her it's wrong and, you know, maybe she won't do it again. But I kept having compulsion to do it. And then my grandmother no longer kept it in anywhere of a reach for me. And then I remember a story also of like my cousin was prescribed some sort of medicine to help her go to the bathroom. And I think I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I knew that the medicine tasted like chocolate because she told me it did. And I remember figuring it out how I was going to get high enough to get up to the cabinet, to get all the way up to the top shelf to get that medicine. And I did it. And I ate the whole bottle. And I think I scared people. I was definitely a phone call to the doctor and try to find out if that could be extremely bad for me. So I think at a young age, I can remember, you know, having food behaviors that were different than other people. But I was like really born into a really loving family that really didn't seem to notice much of it. You know, there were the occasional, you know, my mother would be like, why is there icing containers missing from the refrigerator? And then find it like a week later underneath my bed. Things like that, things that were abnormal, but maybe a child would do with icing. You know, I was always a larger kid. I had fairly healthy family. Everyone seemed to be normal size. I think it was kind of around like I guess puberty age, maybe 13, 14, 15, that I started to kind of gain some weight. And I was always about 2 feet taller than everyone else as well. So it always kind of made me feel like the odd man out. I definitely had struggles shopping because a lot of the people that I was around were not like me. So I can remember being very depressed at a young age because, you know, I couldn't go to the mall with my friends and go to the stores that they went to because I didn't fit into those clothes, but I was like comfortable with myself for a really long time. And I feel like that kept me out of these rooms for a really long time because I didn't think that I really had a disease or that this was a disease. I was really comfortable with the person that I was, but at that time I was tipping the scale at, you know, close to, you know, 270 pounds. And I was, you know, only like 16, 17 years old. So there was definitely, you know, I look back on it now, I couldn't keep up with a lot of people and I held a lot of people back. Maybe I remember like walking down the boardwalk with my friend and at, you know, 16 and 17, having to take a seat because I really couldn't keep up. And, you know, how much time was taken from me because I was in my disease. I didn't know what to do much after high school. And that's when food really became the obsession for me. I went to culinary school and became a chef and worked in that field. I still work in that field to this day, actually. It's, you know, all I've ever known. And I want to say I'm really good at it. And I've had the honor of working with some pretty incredible chefs and learning from them. And, you know, food became an exhilarating new part of my life. Not only was it something I enjoyed to do, it was now consuming every minute of almost every day. I was thinking about food. What was my next menu item going to be? What was my next dessert special? Everything consumed me. And this is years and years that this happened. I met my husband in a restaurant. He was a server and I was the chef. And it suddenly became an instant bond between the two of us, that and alcoholism. So I am I have a sister program as well, Alcoholics Anonymous. And alcoholism was the thing that got me to my knees the first, but definitely not my first addiction. I was about 36 years old. I was very isolated at the time. My husband had taken a job kind of in a rural area, and I no longer was part of the busy hustle bustle of the restaurant business. So I guess you could say I changed it up a bit. You know, I was getting a little bit crazy around the food. So maybe if I took a step back and, you know, didn't involve myself around food as much, that could be a good thing for me. I could slow down a bit. So we ended up moving out of the area and I ended up kind of switching careers a little bit, less in the midst of making food and more of like restaurant management a little bit. And I was still involved in food, but not as much around it. And I kind of got lonely out there and I ate a lot. And when I get lonely, I also get very depressed. And that also started to happen as well. So I went on a really long struggle. And I want to say it's probably about 5 or 6 years of living out there, kind of isolated and eating. I hadn't been to a doctor in a really long time and I was starting to have some physical ailments and finally, you know, was persuaded by my husband that maybe I should go get it checked out. And turned out I had already like gone through the pre-diabetic stage and I was at type 2 diabetes. And they were like considering what they were going to do, like what kind of medicine they were going to use. And you know, I ended up being on metformin for quite a while and trying to get that under control. And I struggled because I couldn't put the food down. And they sent me to a nutritionist. They sent me everywhere. And they're like, you need to figure out the food. It's the food. And I was like, nah, can't be the food. You know, I just wouldn't listen to it. And, you know, it wasn't long before, you know, I was back in the doctor's office, back in the doctor, more issues, more problems. Food finally got to me, I think, to the point where I'm like, maybe I do need to make a little bit of a change here. So I kept trying diet plans at that point. And I went to some different programs to try to lose some weight. And it was definitely a struggle. You know, it was up and down like the yo-yo. And I could take it off in various chunks, but I could never keep it off. I was talking with a friend at one point in time who mentioned Overeaters Anonymous. And I had gotten sober. I think what scared me was that I knew that when I got sober, I had to stop drinking alcohol under any and all circumstances, and I could not drink alcohol. And I was really scared to do that with the food. I never thought it was possible. Like alcohol I could do, but I didn't know if I could do it with food. And it's funny because it's like, you know, it's all about one day at a time to me now. And it's just like, I couldn't get myself to see that with the food. Anyway, rock bottom for me was I was sitting in a beach house with my family, watching them from the couch because I had a really bad gout in flare up where I couldn't walk on my one foot. And at this time, I was probably around 280 pounds. And I was watching them all enjoy themselves on the beach. And I was lonely and I was sad and I was depressed and I wanted to die. And I finally was at my wit's end to the point where I asked a friend, what should I do? And she mentioned Overeaters Anonymous again. And I think I just needed to be at that point. I needed to want to die before I tried something different. So I came to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting, I think, you know, right when I got back from the little vacation that I was on. And I was ripe. I was right at that time. I needed to be talked to by somebody in this program to let me know that, you know, there's hope and that there's a solution. And as much as I knew about AA, as much sobriety I had in AA, I mean, I was helping others, it wasn't helping me feel any better about myself. You know, I wasn't cleared up. I didn't have a connection to higher power. There was something junking me up and I didn't know what it was. And I came and there was someone there that did this newcomers, like took me off to the side and told me that she had been abstinent for a good chunk of time. She told me she did the 12 steps and there was a transformation in her life and she lives her days one day at a time now. And I remember I kept thinking about like, oh my God, I've never been to France. I'm a pastry chef. I've never been to France and I have to go there and I have to eat all this stuff. There's no way I could do this. But, you know, it's ridiculous now because, you know, I can go to France and, you know, I can eat that food if I want to, but I don't want to today. And it's not even a thought in my head today. I was sold when she told me about it. She really, really set it in for me that, you know, life is good for her today because she put down the food and that she can live every day being abstinent and that there's so much more sanity in her life now. I was like, okay, sign me up. What do I got to do? So I had to pick a food plan and a sponsor, obviously, and I found that, I guess I would say a two for one, someone that was willing to share with me their food plan a little bit and a little bit about helping me pick my own and find my trigger foods. And I do follow a food plan now that kind of does keep me away of most of my trigger foods. And she told me that, you know, that this is possible. And she said she was willing to go through the steps with me once I became abstinent and cleared up a bit. And I was willing to do it. I guess, you know, I was ready to take it. And I took my steps with her. It was fairly quickly. We did it kind of over the phone. And I like I said, as Overeaters Anonymous started to become a huge part of my recovery, you know, like listening to podcasts, listening to other overeaters, what you had to share was so beneficial to me. It still is. I mean, but especially in early abstinence. You know, I didn't know how to do a lot of things. I told you, I didn't know my compulsive food behaviors, but I was definitely a person that hid their food. I would go out to eat, or stop and get fast food before I went to people's houses for parties. I would sneak eat at a party. I would, you know, take things up to my bedroom and enjoy them because I didn't want other people to see the way that I eat. And I didn't even know that I was doing it, you know, until I cleared myself up and listed these things down. I had started a small business where I, taught, instructed cake decorating to children. Like that's kind of what I do and did. And I would take cakes from there and plan on giving them to children in my life, like my nieces and nephews or, you know, the neighbor's kids. And I would totally be eating those cakes. Even though I didn't want to eat them, I would be eating them. So these are food behaviors that I knew I belonged here. And not to mention that I was, you know, depressed and wanted to kill myself. You know, there was a lot of things. There was a lot of junk, but the food was but a symptom. So I slowly started digesting this program piece by piece, little by little. And, you know, I'm really grateful I had great sponsorship in my life because my sponsor was a huge part of me even coming back or finding any of this because she was there to answer questions for me. She was there to answer the phone calls, not only my sponsor, but a lot of other people in this program. I didn't know how to live life abstinently. And it wasn't until I was abstinent to realize, oh my gosh, how I used food. So I remember the first time, like I was abstinent for like maybe 2 weeks and a pool guy came and I did not like what he had to say to me about my pool and what had to get done to the pool. And I had this crazy feeling and I exploded on him, first of all, and then afterwards felt completely terrible about it and had to call my sponsor. I wanted to eat so bad. I wanted to eat because I knew that was like the only thing that would make me feel better. But you know what? I made the best decision in calling her because she had helped me figure out what it was, why I was feeling the way I was feeling. And she got me through it without picking up. And to me, I know to pick up today is to die. So I wake up in the morning every day, and I'm a pretty simple person. I thank God for yesterday's abstinence, and then I ask him for another day of abstinence today. I list 10 things that I'm grateful for every day in the morning. It's really important for me because I was a very negative, depressive person. And I try to change that by doing these simple things that have, I've been doing pretty much every day since I came into the rooms.
5 minutes.
Thank you so much. And thank you for being our timekeeper. So what is like today? I do want to say a life still happens, right? So I get through these 12 steps. I learned that food is an issue for me. It's making me insane. I learned that there's a power greater than myself that I found here that can help me get through every situation. And I've made a decision to turn my will and my life over to care of God, as I understood him. I knew that food was but a symptom and I had to get down to the causes and the conditions. I had to figure out why was I eating so much? And then I had to, the best of my ability, make things right in my life and start, I guess I would say, not being a dick to people, because sometimes I could be like that. So I had to clean up my act just a little bit. And then I had to, share with somebody else, which I did with my sponsor. And then I have to seek my higher power for guidance in a lot of my life. And I have to make connections with my higher power. I have to help other people in this program. I have to show up and I have to say yes when I'm asked to do things that I'm completely afraid of, like share at a meeting. But, that's it in a nutshell. That's how I got this program. It is one day at a time. So there are hard things that happen. You know, I went through a pandemic. I was super scared. I was super scared. I couldn't get most of my foods that I am abstinent with at that time when we all started, like the supermarket started to get crazy. I was calling my sponsor every day like, oh my gosh, there's no chicken. There's no eggs. How can I stay abstinent? But I did, one day at a time. God took care of me. A year and a few months into my abstinence, my relationship broke up with my husband of 15 years. And we got through a very beautiful divorce, if there could be a beautiful divorce. I'm so glad that I was abstinent and sober and that I was able to go through it, referring to the 12 steps and, in direct contact with my higher power and my sponsor through a lot of it. I've had some major changes in my life, a lot of fear financially with that divorce. And I know one day at a time, God will take care of me. I've been transformed, as I said. Weight started to just come off when I became abstinent and started working the steps. I'm completely neutral around food today. I'm still a culinary artist. God hasn't seen it fit to find a job that I can, make the money that I make where I am now. So I'm just staying where I am because I'm comfortable. And I look at what I do now as an art form, less of what I can eat, less of my trigger foods, more of like, like paste and clay. And I'm making a beautiful creation for someone else. And I do it today by meditating about the people I'm making it for and the joy that it will bring them. So, neutrality has come to me, but it doesn't come easy. I work hard at it. I'm, like I said, I'm here and I try to keep coming back to lots of meetings. I'm glad to have found this meeting, by the way. It's the perfect time for me. And I'm looking for a home group and I really feel that this home group could be a part of my future. So thanks for letting me share, everybody. Have a wonderful abstinent day.